Chapter 4. As he hurried his men across the ice, Lord Castellan Grim kept looking up at the stormy sky. He depended upon Tegris and his prosecutors to monitor the enemy, to keep him informed of Torglug's movements. If Tegris couldn't keep watch on the enemy, the Hallowed Knights were deprived of their most vital advantage over the plague hosts. Grim could hear the keening song of the Lady of Vines drifting back to him on the wintry wind. Alariel might have called the Jotunberg, but he felt it was her handmaiden who was shaping the living mountain's primal powers, focusing them into the snowstorm that raged across sea and shore. There was an elemental magic in the Branch Wraith's song, an arcane force that flowed from her into the atmosphere, twisting the environment itself to suit the needs of the Sylvaneth Exodus. The storm was now their greatest defense. The veil of icy mist hid the Stormcasts and their allies from the eyes of their pursuers, rendering them nearly invisible unless the observer was within a few hundred yards of them. If Tegris and his prosecutors couldn't find the enemy, then it was doubly certain that the enemy couldn't find them. Or was it? Grim remonstrated himself for falling into the trap of underestimating the foe. Perhaps he needed a touch of Morbus's dour outlook. Maybe the Lord Relictor's bleak opinions were something every leader had to take into account when making his plans. Believe in victory, but have a strategy for failure, had been one of Lord Celestant Gardus's maxims. At the same time, Gardus had also advised that it was better to be mistaken than hesitant. Grim's focus turned from his inner thoughts to the men around him. Once more, he'd deployed the Stormcasts so that they covered the flanks and rear of the Sylvaneth March. The human warriors were faster and more agile than the lumbering tree creatures and tree lords who made up the bulk of the retreat. They would be more capable of reacting to a sudden threat than their allies. Moreover, he noted with a sting of guilt, a Stormcast who fell in battle would be reforged in Sigmaron. The Sylvaneth killed by the enemy were simply dead. It gave him pause to consider how the tree creatures regarded their own mortality. Some of the tree lords were so ancient that the Jade Kingdoms had literally bloomed around them. The Lady of Vines, it was said, was even older still, and had been handmaiden to the Ever Queen even before she came into the realm of Gyron. When such beings perished, it was so much more than the death of a man. It was centuries, even millennia, of life and experience extinguished, knowledge beyond the ken of scholars and sages. That was why the Stormcast Eternals had been forged, why they had devoted themselves to an existence of unending war. Sigmar would turn back the outrages of the Dark Gods, would redeem the realms from the desecration of chaos. For Grim, for all the Hallowed Knights, there could be no mightier or more noble cause, no greater purpose a man could serve. Throughout the realms, there were many who struggled to oppose the spread of the ruinous powers, men who fought only with their own courage and conviction to turn back the darkness. Truly blessed were those chosen by the God King to continue the war in armor of Sigmarite and with weapons forged in the armories of Azir. His hand reached the icon of Sigmar he wore. The silver hammer was small in Grim's gauntlet, but it represented something more powerful than thunder axes and boltstorm crossbows. It was faith, trust in the God King's power and the God King's beneficence, the knowledge that however dark and dire things became, Sigmar wouldn't abandon his servants. Something flashed across the snowy sky overhead. For just an instant, Grim thought it was a flash of lightning, a token of the God King's vigilance. Then the phenomenon was repeated, and Grim was better able to see what it was that sped through the air. It was one of the prosecutors, silver armor gleaming, great wings outstretched as he rode upon the winds. A mighty cheer rose from the Hallowed Knights, a shout of welcome to their airborne brother. The prosecutor saluted them, then wheeled away, climbing high into the sky until he was lost from view. A few moments later, he descended once more. This time he wasn't alone, but instead was accompanied by the rest of the winged storm casts. Tegras, the plumes of his helm fluttering in the chill breeze, spotted Grimm and wheeled away from his troops. Grimm returned the Prosecutor Prime's salute as Tegras landed beside him, cheered by the scout's return. When he noted the severe expression in the warrior's eyes, he found his relief dulled by a sense of foreboding.
You were able to keep watch on Torglug through the storm?
At the moment, his greatest concern was that the prosecutors had lost contact with the enemy. What Tegras had to report was far worse, graver than any prediction Morbus could have made.
We found them, Commander, Tegras said. They have already crossed onto the ice.
How many of them? Grimm asked.
He'd anticipated that Torglug would get a few troops across as quickly as possible in order to harass and delay their retreat.
The whole legion,
Tegras reported, his voice graver than Grimm had ever heard it.
Their accursed sorcerers worked some abominable magic to bridge the sea. An arch of filth spanning from the shore to the ice. The entire horde is across by now, sped by Torglug's threats and barbarities.
Other officers of the Hallowed Knights drew near to hear Tegras's observations and to attend whatever orders Grimm had for them. It was Angston who expressed the most immediate concern.
How long ago did the enemy get onto the ice, and how far away are they now?
Tegras shook his head.
The storm hindered our efforts to keep watch on the enemy. We were forced to fly low to make our observations. When we saw that they were conjuring a bridge with their magic, we tried to speed back to make our report. The storm made it difficult to locate the column again. It's covering your tracks, so there is no trace of the march upon the ice. We were forced to disperse and glide closer to the surface than we should have liked to find you.
The Prosecutor Prime spread his wings with a frustrated twitch.
I fear my report has been delayed some hours now because of the storm.
The news brought uneasy murmurs from the other officers. If the plague hosts had been loose upon the ice for hours, then the enemy might have covered considerable distance. With the storm to hide their advance, they might be anywhere. The cold had chilled the Sylvaneth and slowed their advance, even if it hadn't diminished their prodigious endurance. Torglug would not allow similar setbacks, even if it killed his warriors.
If the storm has hidden us from the prosecutors, then surely it will hide us from the enemy,
Retributor Prime Marcius said.
The enemy counts more than mere men among their ranks, Morbus stated. There are any number of strange beasts and monsters among them that might be able to pick up our scent and chase us down. Some of the demons Torglug has conjured from the pits of Nurgle could track us by the light of our souls.
Or the light of the Queen Seed,
Grimm added, turning his gaze towards the Sylvaneth marching ahead of them. Though he could still hear the Lady of Vines singing her spell song, he couldn't see the branch wraith through the mist, nor the radiant glow of the soul pod she carried. For all that he had been reforged in body and soul upon the anvil of apotheosis, his senses were still those of a man. Would the snows conceal the presence of the Lady of Vines and the treasure she bore from the profane malignance of demons? Grimm decided they could take no such chance. Alariel lived on in the Queen Seed, and it was their duty to protect her.
Our purpose remains the same, Grimm told his officers. We will protect and defend the Radiant Queen.
What are your orders? Angston asked.
For now we continue our march, Grimm told him. But I want the Retributors withdrawn from the flanks and brought to the rear. Those Judicators armed with crossbows will likewise fall back. I want a double rank of Liberators behind the last of the Sylvaneth, and a tightening of the forces deployed to either side at the back of the column.
By strengthening the rearguard, you weaken the rest of the formation, Morbus cautioned. What if the enemy moves parallel to us and intends to fall upon us from the sides?
Grimm shook his head.
I do not think Torglug would show such restraint. He is too keen on catching us. The moment he finds us, I think he will attack.
He paused for a moment, reminding himself that underestimating the enemy was a mistake he couldn't afford to make.
Still, we must guard against that possibility. Remove only every third retinue from the flanks, Angston will be in command of the forces to the left of the column, Lord Relictor Morbus of those to the right.
He turned and faced Tegris.
Do you think your scouts could find their way back to us in this storm?
Only if we flew in a straight line from this point to our objective, Tegris answered. That would necessitate the column remaining while we are gone.
There was worry in his tone, regret that his prosecutors might cause the retreat to be delayed.
We'll leave a relay of pickets to guide you back, Grim said.
He glanced over at Angston.
We detach a warrior to hang behind and wait. The moment the mist starts to obscure him from view, another man falls back to keep him in sight.
It could be done, the knight Vexilor said. The only hazard would be if the storm grows worse and reduces visibility.
Well, that is a chance we'll have to take, Grim said.
Again he turned to Tegris.
I need to call upon your eyes once more. Deploy scouts to our left and right, but most especially I want you to retrace the trail behind us. I think it is from that direction the possibility of pursuit is greatest. Each of you will scout a distance of 3 leagues, then return.
A note of apology sounded in Grimm's voice.
I fear I'm going to abuse the stamina of your prosecutors. Each time you return to report, you'll be sent out again, until we either find the enemy or...
He hesitated, looking again to where the Sylvaneth column was marching.
Or until we get wherever the Lady of Vines is leading us.
Grim watched as Tegris and the other prosecutors rose back into the sky. He didn't like to put the scouts at such risk. They'd have to fly low over the surface, and though the Slaves of Chaos weren't known for fielding companies of bowmen, there was always the potential for a lucky spear cast or dark witchcraft to bring down the scouts. Moreover, even with the line of pickets left in the wake of the column, it would be an easy thing for the prosecutors to miss them and lose their way in the storm. Still, the risk was necessary, however burdensome to Grimm's conscience. They had to know where Torglug's legion was. Angston was just deploying the second picket when Tegris and 3 of his prosecutors came flying back. The winged warriors didn't circle above the column to slow their speed, but instead came diving down straight towards Grim, their boots digging into the ice and snow as they hastily arrested their momentum. Talon growled at them, upset by the haste of their return. Tegris shouted to his commander, Torglug's legion is less than a mile behind the column and moving fast!
Morbus, Angston, you have your orders,
Grim told the 2 officers.
Keep the column moving. As you march, bring a mixed force of liberators and judicators to guard the rear. If it's possible, we'll rejoin you. But I'll send a prosecutor to alert you first. If you see anyone coming out of the storm without warning, cut them down.
Grim busied himself with bringing the rearguard back. The frozen bulk of what must have been an island loomed off to their right, presenting a natural impediment to assault from that direction. Some of the more agile creatures among Torglug's horde might be able to climb the frozen shingle that surrounded the snow-covered mound, but his heavier troops would find it tough going, and it would be next to impossible for his cavalry.
Form the line adjacent to the island,
Grim told the officers of his rearguard. Half of the hallowed knights were dropping out of the column, a double rank of liberators, their massive shields locked together to form an unbroken wall of sigmarite and steel. Behind the second file of liberators was the Annihilation Brotherhood, the Retributors, under Marcius. Most of the hammer-bearing paladins were deployed at the exposed left side of the shield wall, ready to crush any foes seeking to lap around the formation. Others were staggered along the wall itself, a reserve to deal with any enemies strong enough to smash their way through the liberators. Finally, there were the Judicators. Grim had left the archers equipped with skybolt bows with Morbus and Angston, withdrawing only those retinues bearing quick-firing boltstorm crossbows. Their role in the coming combat would be the deciding factor, even more vital than the liberators and their shield wall.
Did you see much cavalry?
Grim asked Tegris as the hallowed knights moved into position. The prosecutor prime nodded.
From what I saw, it seems largely infantry and light cavalry.
He followed Grimm's gaze as the Lord Castellant gave the left flank of the hallowed knights a concerned look. Swift-moving enemies would be able to roll around the exposed flank before the stormcasts could react. Chaos hounds and other brutish beasts would simply circle around and attack the wall from behind. their predatory instincts oblivious to any strategic advantage. Horsemen, however, would recognize the opportunity to bypass the rearguard.
"If they get around us, they'll catch the column," Grimm said, his hand closed around the icon of Sigmar he wore. "If we only had more troops, if we could just extend the line more."
Even as he spoke, a yelp from Talon caused Grimm to turn his head. The column had withdrawn behind the veil of the storm some time ago, vanishing into the snow and mist while the rearguard took up its position. Now, however, vague figures were moving towards them, monstrous shadows stalking through the fog. For a hideous moment, Grimm's heart darkened. Had the enemy somehow already managed to get behind them? A swelling of wonder and relief rushed through Grimm when the shapes started to emerge from the obscuring veil. Inhuman, yes, but they weren't the monstrous horrors of Torglug's legions. It was the Silverneth, a great body of tree creatures marching back to help the Hallowed Knights in their holding action. Gigantic tree lords with strong branches and ironbark trunks, nimble dryads with sharp talons and fanged mouths, and other less distinct tree creatures strode across the ice to join the stormcasts. As though answering Grimm's concerns, the Silverneth placed themselves along the exposed left flank, almost doubling the length of the line.
"They look to be adopting your tactics," Tegris observed,
looking at the massed tree creatures that had assembled into a wall of bark and branches. The mighty tree lords kept place behind the smaller Silverneth, ready to react to any break in the line. The swifter dryads took a post that appeared to mimic that of the Judicators, though Grimm was certain their role would be far different than what he'd planned for his bowmen.
"And the Lady of Vines must have sent them," Grimm said.
Studying the mass of Silverneth, he estimated that almost a tenth of the column had been sent back to support the rearguard. It was tempting to believe the action indicated some expression of acceptance and fellowship between Stormcasts and Silverneth, but he doubted the Branch Wraith was concerned about the men. Her focus was on keeping the Queen Seed away from Torglug, and she was intelligent enough to understand that the longer Grimm's rearguard could hold, the better her chances of escaping. He didn't begrudge her such pragmatism. All of them, man and Silverneth, had obligations far greater than themselves.
"Sigmar grants that their aid is enough," Tegris said.
He pointed away from the shield wall. More dark, shadowy shapes could be seen behind the veil of mist and snow. This time, the tense anticipation Grimm felt was justified. These would be no Silverneth allies. Only the plague hosts of Torglug the Despised would be coming from this direction.
"Sigmar grant us victory," Grimm prayed.
His strategy was about to be put to the test. There is a point at which the pain of flesh reaches its end. Flesh can only withstand so much before it can suffer no more. The mercy of flesh is the dulling of the senses, the numbness of indifference as agony breaks the last boundaries. The spirit, however, the mind and heart of a mortal, these are things for which the only relief from torment is madness. Bit by bit, all that a mortal believes and trusts is eaten away by suffering. What oppression, what degradation can eclipse the futility of faith betrayed? In hope, there lurks the greatest of all pain, for when it is extinguished, nothing is left behind but darkness. The mockery of treacherous hope is the most malicious of tortures, for it is a torment that stabs to the very depths of the soul. How long can one be abandoned to the darkness before the only thing left is to curse the light?
Torglug's blemished eyes squinted as he shook away his thoughts and focused on the captive who had been brought before him. It was a rare accomplishment to subdue one of Sigmar's accursed lightning men. Far easier to destroy them outright, to slay them and send their bodies crackling into nothingness. He was more impressed that Guthrax's demonic bile had taken the winged knight alive than he was at the abomination's skill in shooting the flying spy out of the air.
Torglug peered closely at the captive scout, appreciating the remarkable resistance he exhibited. Only those as favored and blessed by the grandfather as himself could endure the diseased emanations exuding from the great unclean one. Clutched in one of Guthrax's immense claws, encased in the demon's congealed bile, the lightning man should be a mass of boils and buboes, his armor reduced to a corroded mess of rusted scrap. To be certain, there was the stink of decay, the mark of contagion. The spy was resistant, but hardly immune. In time, the dread might of Nurgle would consume his body as it did everything else. The knight would die, his body disintegrating in the blaze of light that devoured all vanquished lightning men. Yes, the rot of Nurgle would kill this man's flesh, but could it destroy his spirit? Torglug's fingers curled around the haft of his axe, twisting the metal out of shape. Destruction was so much more difficult to achieve than death. Any brute beast could bring death. Destruction demanded far greater finesse.
"You are being abandoned by your god king," Torglug gloated.
He waved his blackened axe, gesturing at the huge throng of warriors and monsters marching across the ice.
"Sigmar is fleeing, Gairon. This realm is being Nurgle's dominion. For you, there will be no victory here. Only illusion of purpose. You are giving your loyalty to a dream. A myth. To what end? To what good is sacrifice of your comrades serving when battle already is being lost? What you would be saving is already belonging to Nurgle."
As he spoke, Torglug studied the inscrutable helm of his prisoner. A mighty cough of laughter rippled through Guthrax's obese enormity.
"The pap's thoughts turn to your prize, Torglug Treefell," the demon chortled. "It seems in conjuring this winter, the Radiant Queen expended too much of herself. Her body has withered away, leaving only a seed behind. It is carried now by one of her Sylvaneth, a branch wraith called the Lady of Vines."
Torglug's face curled into a greedy smile beneath the mask of his helm.
"This seed is to be being planted in Grandfather's gardens, to be sprouting amidst the death blooms and corpse vines, to be flowering beneath the leprous boughs of Widow Oak and beside the stagnant pools of Blightreach." "Shall I be telling you a secret?"
Torglug said, his blemished eyes fastened upon those of the Lightning Man.
"Are you knowing what is putting victory within my grasp? After so much fruitless searching, I am finding way into Athelweard. I'm telling you,"
the warlord chortled.
"Lightning men who are finding refuge for me. You are uncovering door I am not finding. You are coming here seeking audience with Alariel to be promising her aid of your Sigmar. Instead, you are breaking spells that are hiding her from me. Belonging to you is glory of exposing Radiant Queen's redoubt."
Guthrax's swollen belly shook with laughter.
"The whelp tries to seal his mind against my power.
To hide his thoughts from the King-Eater," the demon declared. "But the truth of Athelweard's fall has sown disorder within him. There is doubt there."
The great unclean one shrugged its cancerous shoulders.
"Not enough to corrupt or consume," it admitted, "but enough to show me what he would hide."
"And what are you seeing?"
Torglug asked, still gazing into the eyes of his prisoner. He was disappointed that there was still so much defiance there, that the rot of despair had failed to take root even now. He wanted to see that moment when faith died and hope withered inside the Lightning Man.
"I have seen their line of retreat," Guthrax announced. I have seen the Silverneth and the Shiny Knights traipsing across the ice, as though they have any real chance of escaping the Grandfather's power.
The demon lowered its head, leaning closer to Torglug.
Their leader turns to confront you, the demon said. He would bring battle to your horde, to win through force of arms what he can't through retreat. He thinks to prove the valor and might of those who serve his simpering godling.
Feeling a flicker of devotion stir within the captive clenched in its fist, the demon sought to snuff out the warrior's defiance.
The leader's name is Grim, and he is but the replacement for the warrior you vanquished in Athelweird. Ill-suited and ill-prepared to oppose the triumph of Torglug the Despised.
My legion is meeting your comrades in battle,
Torglug assured the prisoner. Despite all the information that Guthrax had ripped from the man's mind, despite the sickening revelation that it was the Lightning Men who'd exposed the way into Athelweird, despite the ascendancy of Nurgle across all Gyron, the warrior's faith refused to break.
They're not keeping me from claiming Queen's Seed for Grandfather, he promised.
Still failing to see despair in his enemy's bearing, Torglug turned away in disgust.
Fanatic,
he hissed, disgorging the word with revulsion. It was simple for a fanatic to be brave. Madness couldn't destroy what it had already claimed. Torglug turned from the prisoner. His bodyguard, the putrid Blight Kings, stood ready to attend their master, safely beyond the pestilential aura of Guthrax.
We are learning nothing more from him, he told the demon. Be sending him back to Sigmar. Be letting his spirit tell his god that I am crossing blades with Lightning Men, and after I am cutting my way through them, I am claiming my prize.
Marching away to join his warriors, Torglug heard the shriek of metal and the crunch of bone as Guthrax crushed the prisoner in its claws. What he failed to hear was a scream. Right to the last, the Lightning Man strove to defy him. Fanatic, Torglug thought. There was no power that could long deny the might of Nurgle. Experience had taught him that. Everything else was delusion, the mocking lies of deceitful hope. Out of the mist and snow they came, a mongrel host of men and beasts. Herds of braying, goat-headed monsters stampeded towards the hallowed knights, grotesque banners of flayed skin fluttering above them. Tribes of barbaric marauders slowly marched forwards, banging their axes against their shields and snarling hymns to the Father of Crows. Swarms of tiny demons, like bloated toads, hopped and slithered across the ice, insane giggles of vicious anticipation spilling from their fanged mouths. Looming above the beastmen and marauders, diseased ogres slogged through the snow, huge clubs torn from fallen Silverneth now clenched in their murderous fists. Ghastly Trogoths, their scaly hides slimy with decay and fecund growth, loped among the warherds, their dull minds hearkening to the call of battle. As he watched the horde advance, Grim prayed that Sigmar's blessing would guard his Stormcasts and their Silverneth allies. The numbers of Torglug's vile legion were daunting. With every breath, more enemies came marching out from the icy fog. Yet there was a terrible comfort in watching the host descend upon the rearguard. By holding the army of Chaos here, they would be giving the Lady of Vines her chance to escape and carry the Queen's Seed beyond the reach of Nurgle's abominable slaves. The first of the war herds crashed into the hallowed knights. The slavering gores hurled themselves against the stalwart warriors with savage abandon. Bone clubs and stone axes shattered against Sigmarite shields. Clawed hands raked futilely across silver helms. Bony hooves kicked at armored legs without avail. For a moment the Stormcasts held their shields high, absorbing the impact of the charging beastmen. Then, at Grim's shouted command, they retaliated in kind. Swords flashed out from between the heavy shields, stabbing and slashing the hairy hides of the gores. Hammers smashed into horned heads or slammed into branded chests, shattering skulls and splintering ribs. Soon there were bleats of pain and cries of fear mixing with the murderous braying of the war herd. Monstrous foes crumpled at the feet of the liberators, dead and dying alike trampled into the bloodied snow as enemies rushed forward to the attack. To the right, diseased tribesmen slammed into the battle line, striving to pull aside the shields with hooked axes and whipping flails. Liberators from the rear rank stepped forwards each time a comrade's guard was overcome by such tactics, stabbing their blades into the faces of startled barbarians. Following an order issued by Grimm, the liberators, beset by the diseased marauders, brought their shields cracking into the howling mass, a violent wave of shining sigmarite that knocked the tribesmen back, flinging them into the faces of the enemies following behind them. The momentum of their rush broken, the rage of the Chaos Worshippers swelled. They lunged back to the attack with the disordered fury of a mob. Disciplined, steady, the Stormcasts met the assault with precision and unity, cutting down scores of the enemy in only a few heartbeats. Near the left flank, where the line of Hallowed Knights met the Sylvaneth formation, a bellowing Bulgor accomplished what masses of beastmen and marauders had failed to manage. Plowing through its own comrades, the hulking monster smashed through the double rank of liberators. Stormcasts were flung aside by the bull monster's horns, while others were cut down by the beast's enormous axe. The flash and clamour of vanquished Hallowed Knights rose from the battlefield as the rampaging brute broke through the shield wall. Survivors closed ranks behind the charging Bulgor, blocking the rush of snarling Ungors that came loping forwards to exploit the gap. The liberators devoted themselves completely to the foes before them, sparing not so much as a glance for the bovine monster that had won through to their rear. Settling with the Bulgor would be for others to attend to. Paladins ran towards the blood-crazed beast, Retributor Prime Marcius bringing his heavy lightning hammer crashing against the creature's leg, pulverizing the bone beneath. As the brute pitched towards the ground, Marcius delivered another brutal blow to its head, cracking its vicious horns. A pained groan rose from the stricken beast. Then it collapsed against the ice as life fled from its mutated flesh. Wheeling around the assaulting infantry, a host of barbarian horsemen charged into the Sylvaneth position. Dressed in skins and furs, their leather helms adorned with antlers and iron spikes, the mounted marauders roared their tribal cries as they thundered towards the tree creatures. Those at the fore of the attack gripped blazing torches in their fists, swinging the brands overhead to stir the flames as they galloped closer. Snarling in defiance, they hurled the torches at their enemy, then spun their charges to the right, making way for the horsemen following behind them. The marauders had intended to throw the Sylvaneth into disarray. After their long campaign to conquer Gyron, the Chaos Warriors had learned how to fight the tree creatures and come to appreciate that the only thing which could sow fear in their wooden hearts was fire. In their attack, however, the barbarians failed to appreciate the effect of the snowstorm. The trunks of the tree creatures were slick with frost and ice, wearing the chill of winter like a layer of armour. The blazing brands struck against them only to glance off without taking light, crashing to the ground and fizzling at the feet of the Sylvaneth. Charging onwards, the mounted axemen found an unbroken wall of foes waiting for them. There were no holes in the line, no burning forest spirits to rush past or cut down with their blades. Instead, the marauders struck an enemy boiling with inhuman rage. The effort to set the Sylvaneth alight had only succeeded in stirring their fury. Claw-like hands and spear-like branches stabbed out at the cavalry, impaling men and horses, ripping shrieking barbarians from their saddles, tossing screaming chargers through the air. Hissing dryads darted beneath the boughs of the larger tree creatures, raking their talons across the bellies of frightened steeds and dragging down dismounted fighters. Havoc and carnage had indeed been the result of the cavalry attack, but it was visited upon the forces of Chaos rather than the defenders. The snowstorm had lost much of its fury over this part of the frozen sea, and from where he stood atop a spur of rock, Grim could see almost the entirety of his battle line. Everywhere the enemy was throwing himself upon the ranks of Stormcasts and Sylvaneth. But it was rare the slaves of Chaos managed to force their way through, and each of these brief incursions was swiftly put down by lurking dryads and the flying squads of retributors. For every enemy the defenders struck down, however, it seemed two more came marching out of the storm.
"They will have to try much harder if they want to break us," Tegris told his commander.
The prosecutors have been held back among the judicators, waiting as a reserve or to serve as messengers should Grim need to communicate with Morbus and Angston in the main column.
"If ferocity was enough, they might prevail," Grim observed. "But these creatures lack the strength and valor to accomplish their purpose. Inside all but the most degenerate minion of darkness, there is buried an awareness of its own wickedness. That self-loathing is what denies them the fortitude of those with righteousness in their hearts."
"They're stubborn,"
Tegris said, pointing to where the remnants of a war herd were leaping over their own dead to reach the liberators.
"If this keeps up, we'll bleed Torglug's legion white before nightfall."
A cold that had nothing to do with snow and ice shivered through Grim's mind as he listened to Tegris's words. It was true, the Hallowed Knights were butchering the Chaos Warriors by the bushel. Yet nowhere amidst the carnage had Grim spotted any of Torglug's heavy troops. There were no Dark Knights in black armour or packs of gauze clad in chain and plate. He had yet to see the bloated, diseased hulks of the putrid Blight Kings, or hear the murderous drone of rotflies. Except for the diminutive Nurglings, none of the obscene demons that marched under Torglug's diseased banner had taken part in the attack.
"By nightfall, the enemy will be cutting a path through the column," Grim cursed, sick realization coursing through him.
Beside him, Talon snarled in sympathy with its master's alarm.
"We're not holding them here. They're holding us. Torglug's sending the chaff to pin us down while his best troops bypass us. He's trying to reach the column."